This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
You're listening to The Western Rookie, a hunting podcast full of tips, tricks, and strategies from seasoned Western hunters. There are plenty of opportunities out there. We just need to learn how to take on the challenges.
Hunting is completely different up there.
I've harvested 26 big game animals.
You can fool their eyes, but you can't fool their nose.
300 yards back to the road turned into 3 miles back the other way.
It's always cool seeing new hunters go and harvest an animal.
I don't know what to expect.
If there's anybody I want in the woods with me, it'll be you.
We're leaving today and entering a world of Mickey Mouse waving, princess meeting and greeting, lightsaber clashing, the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror dropping, Banshee flying, Space Mountain launching, galaxy rewinding, what is the whole network galaxy rewinding, fireworks igniting. World of Other Worlds, for whatever you love. Infinite worlds await at the most magical place on Earth, Walt Disney World Resort.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need, from athletic stuff, like a full-court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff, like a half-mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace, to nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist. Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
The new Chicken Bacon Ranch Street Chalupa is a Taco Bell. You can't get just one. Okay, so that's not like some marketing hyperbole. You literally can't get just one. They come in twos. So like, if you want just one, you're going to need to find a friend who loves slow-roasted chicken, bacon, and avocado ranch sauce. Or a friend of a friend, or have an awkward conversation with a complete stranger to see if they're obsessed with chicken, bacon, and avocado ranch. Or you could just like eat them both because you're obsessed with slow-roasted chicken, bacon. Okay, you get the idea. The new Chicken Bacon Ranch Street Chalupa is a Taco Bell. At participating Taco Bell U.S. locations for a limited time while supplies last.
Welcome back to another Western Rookie podcast brought to you by Go Hunt. I'm your host, Brian Krebs, and today we've got the founder of Shedcast, Dale Liversedge, on the pod. Dale, you reached out like, it's got to be like 6 months ago, and you told me you were launching a shed hunting podcast, and I think it was like the fall. And my first thought was like, today? I mean, you got like four months to go until shed season. And then you're like, no, we're just gearing up. I love the stuff you've been doing when you do shed episodes. And I think you had found a couple of posts we put out of shed hunting. And I've been looking forward to having you on the podcast this whole time. And now I've been seeing your content all over the place. So I'm glad we finally got a chance to sit down and have a pod together.
Heck yeah, man. No, it's good to be on. I definitely have listened to your podcast before. So that's what's kind of cool about it in general, just coming on somewhere that I've listened to.
Yeah, a few people have. We've gotten a few listeners that have either written in and had cool stories, or I just stumbled across them and they're like, yeah, I've been listening for a long time. I'd love to hop on. So it's really cool to talk to people sometimes I feel like they know more than I would have thought about me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'll be like, oh, well, didn't you do that, you know, this time? And I'm like, oh, how do you know that? And I'm like, oh yeah, you listen to me talk every week for an hour.
Yeah, just from listening to the podcast. It's funny about that too, because sometimes you get people who aren't avid listeners, and then others who are like myself. I've listened to podcasts for years, you know, not even just hunting stuff, anything and everything, nursing stuff, or even, I mean, you name it, space, yeah, freaking money, finance, you know, just anything in general, just to learn more and hear those conversations.
Yeah, me too. I listen all over the place. Pretty much since I started 2 hunting podcasts, I don't listen to as many hunting podcasts anymore.
Yeah.
I listen to a lot of other things, finance, business, growth, interesting people on Rogan. Yeah, but I don't listen to a ton of hunting podcasts anymore.
No, I feel like I do. It depends on the season. So if it's coming up, I'm like, all right, I just like getting all that information just like in my head, you know, to think about. So yeah, if it's like coming up on whether it's whitetail hunts, coos deer hunts, mule deer, just to get some of that information kind of re-rolling in my head.
Yeah, that'll do it.
Yeah, but that'll I have listened to a bunch of the Two Bucks podcast as well. So not just one of your podcasts. I've listened to both.
Awesome.
A lot of good information on that. Yeah.
Yeah. Some of the people we have on Two Bucks, is they're just like gold mines of information.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That was a cool show. That's a cool show. We're actually thinking of opening up Two Bucks to do more habitat as well. Mm-hmm. So basically for the first 130 episodes, we've focused on the dollar bucks. And now I want to open it up and talk a little bit more about the deer bucks. Because mm-hmm. that was what Two Bucks was originally for, is both bucks, the ones that grow antlers and the ones that pay for them. And so, mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll see where that leads. But it's just fun, dude. It's just fun talking to cool people that you share interests with. And I'm sure you're seeing that now. You've had a lot of really cool people on your show, some that we've had on our show too. So I know exactly mm-hmm. how cool they are, like Weston MacArthur and all the shed hunting people from the West. There's a lot of overlap and it's super cool. How has your show Shedcast been going these first, like, you're 2 months in now?
I started in, I think, September. I launched the first episode, and that was just to kind of get things rolling.
Okay.
And then just so I can start generating just something, so that way I have, you know, something to bring yeah. people in with as well. So,
okay. So, you're more like 5-6 months in.
Yeah, definitely. Awesome. Yeah. I started, yeah, September, then ran through pretty much all the way to December, did my last one. And I'm just breaking it up by seasons based on the yearly, like, kind of every year is just going to be a new season, however I do it. And just kind of going with however it goes from here. It really just kind of started out as just kind of wanted to just get going. Didn't want to wait and kind of do too many things and let it get away from me. It was more like, I just got to start and then I'll just get better as I go. And I'm sure you know that. It's just, you get better at little tidbits here and there and upgrade your equipment and start this and start that. So it just kind of started from there, and other guys were able to see it and kind of, I mean, everyone loves talking about shed hunting and stuff. So, and it does come up seasonally for people. So that's a cool thing. But then there's a lot of guys that also like to just do it year round regardless. So those are the guys that have been coming out and just like, hey man, we love it, keep doing it, you know? So the encouragement has been good.
Yeah. I will pick up an antler in any season, but I do focus more on active shed hunting in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
But we just did a great episode with shed season.
Mm-hmm.
That group there, you definitely got to get connected with those guys.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I have one in the works with Dwayne already. It just hasn't released yet. So we recorded it. I did one with TJ a while back with Rack Hub, and then I did one with Dwayne not too long ago. So that one will be coming out here pretty shortly. But no, those guys are doing great things. I just hung out with TJ a little bit at the Hunt Expo. So we were seeing some of their stuff coming out. They have some new products coming out this year. It's kind of hard to see in here, but
RH2 up there.
Yeah, literally right. Both of them basically sit right up to my.
I've got an RH2 in a box right there that I still got to put up. It's an oversized RH2. It's for those two elk sheds.
Oh yeah, those things are so nice. Right, yeah, and TJ comes from an engineering background, so he's done such a great job at making those things hold that heavy weight. You know,
yeah. So we got some cool products too. I don't know what's out there yet, so I don't know what I can talk about. I got in on. So we just recorded one, I think, two nights ago with Dwayne, good buddies with Dwayne, and we're talking about. Him and I are like building out our properties to find more sheds. So that's how crazy we are and to hunt. But a lot of the things I'm planting is with shed hunting in mind. And then we started talking about Rack Cub, and I'm like, the bummer, like, it's super cool that TJ trusts me enough to send me, like, he sent me a few prototypes that I've tested out and sent them pictures and sent them back. The bummer is I can't talk about them for like 6 more months because they're not released yet. So it's kind of like this double-edged sword where you get to see a bunch of cool things, but you can't talk about them or share them. And so I got to remember, it's like, oh, are those released yet? Or are they not released yet? Mm-hmm. What can I share? What can't I share? Sometimes I probably put out a little too many teasers like, oh, there's going to be some sweet stuff coming. Keep an eye out.
Yeah. They were showcasing some of their new Euro mounts.
Okay.
At the Hunt Expo, which was really cool. I don't know if you've seen those yet or not, or you probably were able to.
Yeah, the Euro mounts, he sent me a prototype that I was dabbling with and testing out how they work for antelope and mule deer.
Yeah, those things are really cool. Yeah, I like that. That'll work really good with elk. And I was telling him at the show, I have a elk dead, like not a deadhead, but a Euro mount that I put up on the wall, and it's just got a slight little crick to it where it's just, most people probably don't even notice, but when I look at it, I'm like, oh, it's just a little bit tweaked to the side.
Well, elk are probably easier to tell if they're not level two, because you have like a 4 foot lever that it's easy to be like, oh, that's off. You know, white tail, it's just shorter, so it's harder to tell if it's really off, but an elk, it's off a little bit and it's like this. So I've never shot an elk that I, the only two elk I've shot were a shoulder mount elk.
Yeah.
So I'm batting a 315 average.
Oh, that's good, man. Those are big bulls.
Yeah. I think one was giant and one was not. I shot a 280 and a 354.
Yeah. 354?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a big bull. I mean, even in the 200s, honestly, those are big bulls. People get numbers in their heads and then they see them in real life, and there's a 260 bull that's, you know, it's a pretty, still a decent size. I say that because mine was like a 260.
I think 260, 270, 280, those are the big bulls you're thinking of to the listener. Like when someone's like, oh, I shot a nice 6x6, it was a 280. Like Instagram makes you think 320s are around every corner and people are only shooting 320s. I have seen a lot of bulls within 100 yards bow hunting. Every time I see a raghorn at 50 yards, I'm like, look at that satellite bull, let's kill him. And we kill everything that's legal. Like, we do not pass elk. And it's like, oh, I thought this was like a 200 inch 5x5. It's a raghorn 4x4. You know what I mean? Like, they look so much bigger in person. And so it's like, who cares? Unless you have shot a lot of elk and you've got a lot of season to hunt, don't pass legal elk.
Yeah. Yeah. I just always go with whatever excites you. I mean, and not being worried about what other people are going to think, and not, and I've heard these conversations before, but not starting your post with, well, he's not the biggest, but I mean, hey, if you wanted to shoot it, you know, then be proud of it. So.
Yeah, I mean, you're in a 1% club if you bring an elk home.
Yeah.
Like, less than 1% of humans in the world have ever done that.
Yeah, and it's not easy.
No, nothing's easy. It's not any easier. I mean, it's a slight easier to carry them when they're smaller, but it's still a ton of work. I've carried big bulls. I've carried small bulls. It's always work. So, it's great. I want to find more elk sheds. I want to start stacking them up. You were based in the West, right?
Yeah, I'm out of Arizona. Yep.
Arizona. Oh, man, that's elk shed. That's like one of the elk shed capitals of the world, I would say.
There are some big bulls. So my dad has like a running joke with us too, that he's got like a 364 he killed, and then like another one was like a 350 something. So he's just like, yeah, you know, no big deal. Like, and we're out there fighting, trying to kill something bigger, you know, but there are a lot of big bulls in this state, and I was gone for a long time. So I was in the military for about 8 years, and then I lived in Nebraska for 2. So I was gone for like 10 years.
Wow.
So I spent a lot of time out of state doing other stuff too. So I was able to shed hunt in Washington State and Colorado, just kind of random states throughout, you know? So
yeah,
kind of in addition to where I've been and what we were doing at the time. So
what, so is elk your like bread and butter? That's what I find. That's what I care about. Or do you get really into the mule deer and the coos deer as well? What's your like kind of, what's the pie look like for you when it comes to finding antlers?
Elk are the best just because they're the biggest, but I also really like getting into the deer sheds for sure.
Yeah.
It's always fun picking them up. Coos deer ones are tough, but they're also really cool to pick up. I was getting kind of lucky because we have early archery season in January here, the over-the-counter tag.
Yep.
So I was chasing some deer around and stuff. So I actually got into a few deer sheds this year so far. So I'm like 4 deep so far. Nice. And I think three of those. No, 2 and 2. 2 of them are coos deer sheds and 2 of them are mule deer sheds. So
yeah. Do you have a season goal? Do you set like a season goal number to find every year?
I usually don't. My biggest goals, I think, right now are just trying to get the time to get out, honestly, because I'm so busy. I work 2 other jobs with, I'm a nurse in the emergency room, and then I also work at the community college here for the nursing program. So I work in like the clinicals, helping students kind of get through that stuff. So between that, and then I have 2 kids and a wife. So between everybody's schedules, it's more or less my goal is to get out and pick up sheds, you know?
Yeah.
So
that's a busy guy, man.
Yeah.
I hear you.
Crazy. Yeah.
I have 1 job, no kids, and I still have a hard time getting out to shed hunt. There's just so many things to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Ice fishing up here. So I'm from Minnesota, which is like Canada compared to you. Mm-hmm. You're from Mexico. I'm from Canada. And yeah, it's tough, man. There's so many things going on. We're actually going out on our farm for the first time tomorrow. We've got a good snow pack, and I've been putting out a couple feed sites here in the backyard and around. And so we've got good trails in the snow, but we're going to lose it all in like 3 days. And so we're going to try to get out in the, like, we have some thick, thick country. Like, I've shed hunted New Mexico. If it's anything like Arizona, it's, you know, it's thick, but you can glass sheds. You can, you know, see 20, 30 yards. Here we have like 3-foot visibility in our swamp.
Yeah, that can be super tough. That's one of the good things about Arizona is, or some of these western states more or less, is the ability to glass. And that's a big component or a big tool to use and not kill your legs when you're out looking, you know?
Yeah, no glassing. I bring my binos just so I don't have to walk over to check something if it's a shed. That's about the only reason I bring my binos in the east. But we're just shed hunting because it's our farmstead. It's me and my wife's first property we bought together. So it's kind of sentimental. We're not going to find a lot of sheds. We haven't found one yet. So if we find one, it'd be awesome. I find a majority of my whitetail sheds in like the Dakotas.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's, I saw that you hunt elk out there too, right?
Just once. It's just once in a lifetime.
Yeah. That's a pretty cool place. When I was in Nebraska, I was trying to get out that way, but I never made it because I was in school there. So I was pretty busy when I was there, but I was able to shed hunt for deer probably in more states than for elk, really. But so for deer, shed hunting over there was like a whole different ballgame compared to the West, you know? So with all the different ag fields and CRP and all kinds of different type, like you mentioned, the real thick woody areas, a lot of that. So it kind of gave me the challenge to try to figure out, you know, and that was pretty cool to do. I did find some stuff though, but I've got a set. You can't even see it. There's a set up here I found in Nebraska up there, but.
Yeah, it's tough. Here, I think it's tough everywhere. I think every place has its unique challenges. Mm-hmm. So like when we were in New Mexico, there's no like destination food sources. mm-hmm. right? It's just mountains and plateaus and mesas and tables. And I'm like, what's a mesa? What's a mesa? And then I took some Spanish lessons again and Duolingo. And I'm like, oh, mesa means table. Because I would have always called them tables.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, and it's just like, you just got to find them. You walk into a pocket mm-hmm. and then you just sit down and grid it. So there's a challenge in that, like knowing mm-hmm. how, what the elevation is. Same in Arizona, if you get snow, like what elevation, where are they going to be? Mm-hmm. Here in Minnesota, our challenge isn't so much that, because most of our whitetails don't do long distance migrations and have like wintering grounds, but mm-hmm. they will find the best available food source and they might move over a mile. Having the right tool for the job can make all the difference in the world. And that applies for Western hunts too, especially if you're coming from the Midwest like myself. Because if you don't have it, there's no going home to get it. And that's why many of us Western hunters are also gear junkies. And the same is true for the folks over at Go Hunt. They have built the Go Hunt gear shop to be jam-packed full of the best, highest quality gear needed for your Western hunt. They try out everything that gets into the shop. And if they don't like it or they don't use it, it doesn't make the cut. So if you need something for your next trip, Go Hunt has something for you in the gear shop. They've got everything from optics, gear, camping accessories, apparel, footwear. They've got packs, and they've got some of the best brands in the industry. So if you're in the market for some new gear, consider checking out the Go Hunt Gear Shop. They're an avid supporter of the outdoors. They are supporters of this podcast, and most importantly, they're supporters of you. They want to help you be more successful in the West, so there's no better place to shop for gear, information, and knowledge than Go Hunt. And if you use the code WESTERN when you check out, you're going to get 10% off most of the regular priced items in the shop. So head over to GoHunt.com, get the gear you need, use the code WESTERN, and get the right tool for the job this fall. And with our parcel sizes and private land, like, it can be a real challenge figuring out what food source they're on and finding them that way. And so mm-hmm. I think every place has their challenges. And you just get good at, like, what I'm good at is I just spend a lot of time scouting until I find the food source that's worth walking. Like, if it's like here, if we have 3 feet of snow and I can't walk across the top of it like cement because of all the tracks, like, that's not good enough sign for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can shed hunt our family woods back home till I, you know, wear the soles of my boots off, but we just don't have a big wintering herd. We're not going to find sheds, you know, as much as we love our property and shoot big bucks every fall, like, they just don't winter there.
Yeah. And with Arizona too, I mean, even some of the states that are north of us have more migrations with winter. They just have colder winters. So with Arizona, even, I don't feel like I see a whole lot of major migrations. There might be some minimal ones, but nothing too major. But like you mentioned, snow is going to make a difference. Feed's going to make a difference. This winter has actually been really, really dry. So that's definitely going to change things up, because now maybe they're going to be kind of hugging closer to water because of the lack of rain and snow that we actually have gotten this year. I was actually just up north a few weeks ago. We went snowboarding and it was like, I've never seen the mountain that, like, with that small amount of snow on it. It was the weirdest thing to see somewhere that I've grown up as a kid going up to every year to snowboard, and they're just being completely whited out in snow and all the runs are open. But in this case, it was like, I think 5 of like the 60 some runs are open, and it was insane. So yeah, needless to say, I did stretch the legs a little bit and go look around and stuff, but I didn't find anything. But I ran into elk and stuff, so I'm like, okay, well, I'm in the right place, just maybe not the right time, or maybe I just need a little more time, speaking of, is just to do some more walking. I only had like 2 hours, so I was walking quick.
Yeah, and elk usually don't drop this early, right?
No, not this early. It's kind of starting to, like, maybe February, March, April, I've seen some with some are like smaller mm-hmm. raghorn bulls still kind of hanging on in like late April even.
That's crazy to me how late they hold and then how fast they grow.
Yeah. And even with some of the deer too, I mean, they are holding even longer than the elk, you know? So out here specifically, like, we're talking March, April, May as well. So,
wow.
What, which is a big difference when you're comparing east to west. Like, that's what's kind of cool about it in general. And what I've been finding to be pretty cool with like talking to so many people on the podcast is like, you definitely mentioned this earlier, but there's so many differences in literally every state. So it trickles kind of from the north down to the south with us, these different patterns of when they shed and when people start shed hunting.
Yeah. Yeah. Like in here where I'm worried, they're all shed out because I haven't seen a buck on camera in over a week. And so I'm thinking they're probably shed out. My buddy's, he found 3 70-inch whitetail sheds in January. And he's like, we've been shed out for weeks already. And so last year I had a 10-point buck in March 24th. So I think out here we are very dependent on the winter we get for how late they shed. I think certain species tolerate winter better. Elk, I think, tolerate winter really well. Like they probably, and they're pretty consistent. Like you don't typically see elk dropping antlers in January unless something's wrong. But you know, that the winter of 23, there's a lot of things wrong. Like 600 inches of snow made some impact. So yeah, it's fun. It's interesting. How on the podcast, speaking of the podcast, I know you're in the West. You probably have the most networks and connections in the West, but are you, you know, talking to people from all over the country that shed hunt? I mean, what's the scope kind of been? What have you been seeing?
I want to talk to everybody.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to stick to one little portion. I shed hunt the West. So I know, or based on my little experience compared to some of these guys I'm talking to that are just so good at it.
Yeah.
So that was one of the reasons. It's like, I want to learn anything and everything about it from everybody. So that way everyone else can also learn, you know, little tips and tricks or the differences, the cool stories. But no, I've been talking to guys all over the place. So I've been, it's you name it, from east to west. I'm trying to get everybody.
Yeah.
So,
there's a couple people that I've ran across that are finding like moose paddles in Maine or caribou sheds in Alaska.
That seems
pretty wild.
And that's like, for me, is my bucket list shed hunt right there. Moose sheds would be cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Big old paddles. We had a guy find one elk hunting in Montana. Big old moose shed too for a Shiras. I mean, this thing was, it was like, to me, it felt like it was probably like 30 inches from the base to the top of the paddle. Mm-hmm. And that sucker was heavy. The guy that found it was like, I'm not carrying that out of here. If you carry it out of here, you can have it. I'm like, are you nuts? Like, I would have carried that sucker out of there. It's probably 20 pounds.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Wouldn't have let that thing, even if you got to drag it behind you, just attach it to your belt.
Well, it was only like 500 yards from camp. Like, it wasn't that. Yeah, the guy just didn't have any. He's like, whatever.
If they see him all the time, they just step over him. Yeah.
No, he was from Minnesota. That was the first elk moose shed ever found. Yeah, he just didn't care.
Oh, man. No, heck no, man. If I see him, they're coming with me.
I've foot raced buddies to sheds before.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. We both see it at the same time, and then you look at each other and just...
I was going to say, I've picked up some that have literally fallen apart under their own weight, that they were just laying out there so long.
Yeah.
And it looks so good. And we talked about glassing earlier. It's so nice to glass up a shed because you know it's there. Like, you're not looking for it. It's just like, boom, that's what it is. So I glassed up a few sheds and I was sitting on top of a little peak. The kind of nice thing about the desert is just get up high and you can let your eyes do the walking. So got on this little peak and I was glassing across these like little flats. And for us, we don't have like, down in the desert, we have like creosote bushes and Palo Verdes and different little, and cactuses and stuff. So kind of desert plants.
Yeah.
And I was glassing across a bunch of those and just right out in the flat, man, a big old 4-point, another big 4-point, and another 2-point. And I'm like, holy cow, that was a good little spot that people had been overlooking. And so I packed up my stuff, went out there to pick him up, and the 4-point was good. The big 4-point was good. The 2-point was fine, a little older, but then there was like another big 3, and that thing just, right when I lifted it by like the base, that thing just fell apart on its own. Yeah. I was like, holy cow, that thing had been there for years.
Sidewalk chalk. Yeah, I found a couple pink sheds. It's always a bummer. You're like, dang, wish this wasn't pink.
Yeah.
When
you shed hunt in New Mexico, did you get into elk sheds?
Yeah, we did. And we're probably going back again this year. That was 2 years ago. We went as a group with a guy that, Stephen Walker, be a great guest for your podcast if you haven't talked to him yet.
He sounds like a really cool dude. I listened to your podcast with him on, and I've seen his YouTube videos and stuff. He seems like a really positive guy.
Yeah, he is great human. I mean, everyone's like, oh, he's a nice guy. It's like, well, okay, if everyone's a nice guy, Stephen is nicer.
Yeah.
Whatever the better version of that is. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, no, we got into some elk sheds. Great trip. The year I couldn't go because we were buying a farm and getting married and doing all kinds of wild adult things. They even got into them better. So then I really got a case of FOMO. And so this year I'm trying to go back. We got some tight trips though, because it's like the day I get back, the next day me and my wife hop on an airplane for a vacation. And she's like,
you're cutting it close.
Yeah, you're cutting this a little close. I don't want you to be cranky. And I'm like, I'll be fine. I'll be high off elk shed energy.
Yeah. But gonna come back really way up high, being excited from the sheds for sure.
Or completely
drained.
Yeah, drained and depressed that we didn't find any. One of the two.
No, the New Mexico holds a ton of bulls too. So I imagine if you guys got into them before, you guys will be good again.
Yeah,
I'm trying to work out a little trip to go that way, and then I need to hit Colorado too. Colorado is a cool place.
Yeah, Colorado has more regulations on when you can and can't find sheds, especially in public land. And so that's why we went to New Mexico. Mm-hmm. We were actually going to go to Arizona, but we were like, hey, you know what? It's going to spend so much time driving that we'll just stay in New Mexico. And so we'll see.
Did you drive all the way out from Minnesota?
Yeah, I drove all the way down to like KC and met up with the buddies. And then we drove from there. So it was like 20 hours.
That is a lot of driving for sure.
But it's worth it if you find a bunch of sheds.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you don't want to drive that far and get skunked.
No, we don't. And I love whitetail sheds too. I mean, I love both. It just seems like elk sheds are so much harder to find, and there's less of them, that if you're going to go on a trip, like there's some places that I've gone before where I can find 20 sheds in a weekend and they're a third of the distance. Versus driving all the way to New Mexico to find 10 elk sheds. It's like, it's sweet, but it's a long ways.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot of work too.
Yeah. Yeah. It is a lot more walk. It's a lot harder walking. I brought my shed dog and I had to like carry him off cliffs, and he's a big shed dog. He's a 95 pound dog that I was carrying up and down these mesas, 'cause we get cliffed out.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was not fun at all. Nothing about that was fun.
Yeah, it can be rough. You can get into some really steep, some thick, nasty country for sure, trying to look for sheds.
You know what's one thing that I'm a little surprised you don't see a little bit more of? When you're glassing out west, and we've done this, we did it in New Mexico, we're glassing, we're like, that, there's a shed. You know, boom, there's a shed, there's a shed, there's a shed. We're marking them all. And now we have really good tool. I mean, if you have the money for them, you have really good tools where you can like range find on a binoculars, and it drops a pin on your Onyx, so you know exactly where it was. Yeah, great. So we sent the guy down. We sent Dan Matthews down there to go find these all sheds. Every one of them turned out to be sticks. And one of them, Dan was like, yeah, there's a shed there. And I'm like, dude, I don't think that's a shed. But then we looked at one I found, and we were both like, that is 100% a shed. It's the whale tail of an elk shed, and the fifth, it was like the fourth, which was like a 5-point shed, right color, right shape, right everything. He gets there, twiggles it. It's a branch.
Oh man.
And so I'm wondering, like, why don't people, you see more like micro drones where it's like, if you're not quite sure, like you don't see the whole thing, you throw that drone up there, fly it over there, be like, nope, that's a stick, and fly it right back. Like, you're 3 minutes of battery. Like, these drones are lasting like 45 minutes now.
Yeah.
You could do that like 12 times a day and save yourself like 12 miles of walking.
Yeah, that would be nice. I've definitely been fooled by the stick sheds, man. That is something that will get you for sure. There, it's the craziest thing that there's sticks out there in the shape of an antler, and they are white as can be. And you think they're like some sort of hard white shed. But you get all the way over to them, and sure enough, you're like, nope.
Well, the nice thing about whitetails is that you're not looking that far away, mm-hmm. so that you can generally always tell if it's a stick or not with your binos. Mm-hmm. And even if it's not, you're like walking 300 yards across flat ground max. Whereas out there, this was like you had to drop off a cliff like 100 yards down and then mm-hmm. go out into this thing and then climb back out of that hole yeah. for nothing.
Oh, yeah. There's no way I'm not going to go over there for those. So anytime I see them, that's why I carry a spotter with me when I go, because that very specific reason is just to get a little bit closer and get a little more detail.
We were using spotters because we drove right up to the rim of a canyon and we were sitting right on the rim. So I did my spotting scope, and Dan was like, this is a shed. And I'm like, okay. I mean, like, it started out like, I don't know. And then he's like, no, it's a shed. And I'm like, I don't know if I see it. Yeah. You're not telling him he's wrong, but he's like, no, I'm going to go check it out. I'm like, okay, that's fine. But while you're down there, I got one over here. And he's like, oh yeah, that's a shed. Well, then he climbs down there and I'm trying to guide him in to the shed because you lose sight of it and you don't know where it was.
Yeah.
He didn't have the pin thing. And so I see him, but then I lose him. And then I see him and then I lose him. And then I lose him for a long time. And we're talking on the radio. Hey folks. I've been hunting out of Booner panel blinds by Maverick for years now, and one of my favorite things about the Booner blinds and all of Maverick's hunting blinds is how easy they are to set up. I recently set up two new blinds this last season, and I had both blinds set up by myself without any heavy equipment. You can carry each panel of your blind to the top of your platform and set it up by yourself in a single day. The best part about Maverick hunting blinds is that you get the all-weather comfort and scent control benefits of a hard-sided blind at a fraction of the cost. I mean, you can literally get 3 Maverick hunting blinds for the same price as some of the other options on the market, meaning you get triple the options when it comes to picking where you want to hunt so you can be in the right stand when that big buck walks out this fall. Click the link below and head over to maverickhunting.com and use the code WESTERNROOKIE, that's one word, WESTERNROOKIE, to save 10% on your next blind. He was like, can you see me? I'm waving my hands. I'm like, dude, I have no idea where you are. He's like, I'm standing next to this thing. And I'm like, dude, I don't know. And so I'm like looking. I'm like, it's been this far. You shouldn't be there. That. He's like, all right, I see some rocks. I'm like, dude, I don't even see rocks around the shed. And he's like, okay, well, I'm going to climb up on the rocks, like look for rocks and you'll find me. He was like 5 times farther than the shed.
Oh my God.
Out on the horizon. I'm like, dude, you went like a mile and a half and this shed is like 800 yards from me. Like you are way too far. He's like, oh, all right. I'm like, okay, come back. And then it was still hard, even though I knew where he was, it's still hard to find him. So yeah, he spent probably an hour on that adventure to go see 2 sticks.
Yeah, that can be tough, man. I've had where I've been shed hunting by myself and mark something on try to mark something on the map. Now there's tools like you mentioned. The Onyx has like the range tool, which is nice to stretch that out there, find a landmark on the map and pin it. And that makes it, I mean, just so much more accurate. But I've gone out after things and just not found it. And I'm like, I could have sworn it was a shed. And I don't know, maybe it was, maybe it wasn't, but then I'd never even got to like a stick to even confirm, because it's like you just get lost in this thick stuff once you hit the floor where it's supposed to be, you know?
Yeah. So you got to take pictures in your spotter for sure of like what it looks like through the spotter. So when you're there, you're like, oh yeah, that's the tree I was looking at.
Absolutely. Yeah. Try to find landmarks that are directly above it. Dead trees are usually a good tell. Stuff like that.
Have you done anything with Scout to Hunt? Have you seen that?
Yeah, I use that one too. I use multiple apps for sure.
Yeah.
I like some of the features they have on there too. The south facing slopes are a big one.
Just the shed matching, the shed analytics. Like it's Onyx, but for shed hunting with like analytics that matter for shed hunting. It's awesome. Brendan Labrum's been on the podcast many times. We're going to have him on again. Be a great guest for you. He's the founder of Scout to Hunt. And they do the $50,000 Bitcoin shed hunt.
Oh, yeah.
Last year was $60,000 because someone never found the shed from the year before. So they just added it.
Really?
But yeah, wow. They do a huge shed hunt. So it's 5 antlers. Each one of them, if you win, you get $10,000 of Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm. Which is, yeah, that's a wild. I've looked at those clues and try to figure it out, but man, people are just quick with those things. There's some tough riddles.
Arizona is usually one of the states
that stays longer, huh?
No, just one of, like, it's five states. Yeah. So it's like, usually it's like Arizona, Utah,
Colorado,
Idaho, Montana, Colorado. It changes every year, but
okay. Yeah.
I keep telling them, hey, if you ever want to do a whitetail, let me know. I got some places I can hide a whitetail shed.
Yeah. I think last year's too, actually just talked to the guy and his girlfriend. I forgot their names. I apologize. But they found the Coos Whitetail 10K shed last year for Scout to Hunt. So I was talking to him. I'm like, hey, man, come on, tell your story. You know, that would be so awesome to hear, actually, because those riddles can be tough and figuring that stuff out, man. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So he was game for it. So hopefully we can get him on. Scout to Hunt, though, really good app, a lot of great features. It's kind of hard because I'm like running tracks and like both apps too sometimes. So I'm like, my battery's draining, so I usually carry an extra battery pack too. But and then go full airplane mode, just trying to save battery, all the things, you know. But anytime if I find a shed, I mark them in both, you know, too. Yeah. So that way I try to keep more of my like you mentioned, the tracking features and the mile counters and the antler counters and stuff like that all within Scout to Hunt. So that way all my like shed per mile is like accurate, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I like to do all my shed hunting in Scout to Hunt now and then all my other stuff in Onyx. But sometimes I use Onyx for like property boundaries and stuff. It's hard. And we're partnered with Go Hunt. So I use Go Hunt maps too. I mean, I got like three maps.
Yeah, and they've been really working on a lot of their features too, so they got a lot of good stuff going with theirs.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm excited. I'm trying to get three trips planned for shed hunting. My wife only knows about one of them. But she's going on the other one that she doesn't even know about yet. So, yeah, hopefully three. I always set a record of 100 or a goal of 100. And I've never even gotten close to it. 46 is my record. So it's a stretch goal. That's what we call in engineering, is a stretch goal. And so we'll see if we ever do it. But, I mean, where we go, there's potential for like 30, 40 antler weekends.
Mm-hmm.
And you do that a couple times and it adds, you get there fast. And so we'll see what happens. We'll see. I would love to do like a series on the podcast of like a shed update. You know, like it's like we'll get into the, you know how Meat Eater, you've listened to Meat Eater, right? Mm-hmm. They get like all this stuff that they talk about at the beginning, like new business, right? It's like, this happened. You know, what do we think about that? And this guy got shot by a polar bear stole his pistol and shot him. And, you know, this other guy, you know what I mean? They go through the whole list of the news and then they get into the podcast. Yeah. I'd like to do that in the shed season. Like, all right, this week we're up to 13. We found four more on the farm. You know, here's the four we found. This one. Cool stuff. All right. This week we got Dale from Shedcast.
Yeah.
And I think it'd be cool, especially if you were going out consistently and finding them. And it's like every week people are tuning in like, oh, did he get to, how many more did he find? How close are we getting? And it's like, if we find 100, we're doing a big giveaway. And yeah, probably give away the 100th shed and then that'll be like a booner.
Yeah, that's awesome. Actually, that's a good idea. Even for just a video, like just a tally counter, you know, keeping track with it too would be a good.
Yeah, some of my early social media viral videos were all shed hunting.
Yeah, I know. Your TikTok stuff too has a ton of stuff on there. A lot of cool stuff on there.
Some of my earliest TikToks were shed hunting humor videos that I was putting out and getting crazy views on. For me, like having like zero, I was like, I don't know. I treated it like this, like redheaded stepchild app where it's like I'd throw anything I want out on TikTok because I don't really care about it, but if it's going on Instagram, it's got to be good. And then all of a sudden I was getting like 50,000 views with like three followers, and
that's what the craziest thing about TikTok is, it's just like the most random things get the most views, and then some of the stuff that you put a lot of work into, it's like 500 views, and then my other video that I'm like, no one's gonna like this, it's like 10,000 plus, you know, like in a day.
I've had a hard time getting podcast clips to consistently do well on anything. It just seems like those are really tough to get like good growth and stuff out of. So I kind of stopped posting podcast clips and just went back to just genuine content. And then that's been really good again. So we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been pushing a lot of the reels, trying to just push, trying to just get my name out there further and further. So the more, I've been doing like a little bit of everything, trying to get, I like the funny side of things too. So the humor, all that stuff. So I've been, I have a long list of ideas that I have still yet to make it out yet. So, so I have a ton of stuff in the works, and then, just the humor things I like to do just for fun. So I have some of those, and then the shed hunting content in general, just, I want to be on more shed hunts anyway. So that just kind of helps me, like, you know, I need to get out and do some more stuff anyways.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
those definitely do well, because I mean, you gotta have a little bit of credibility if you're trying to talk about it, you know? So in general, that stuff. And then, the reels with podcasts like this, you know, also it depends. Sometimes you would think it's, I don't know, the algorithms are funky, I feel like, these days. So it's kind of weird. Sometimes they flop and sometimes they just go sky high. So it's so strange. But
yeah, no, I get you. I get you for sure. So with the, what I got to maybe back up a little bit, like, what inspired you to go from like a shed hunter to be like, dude, I just want to talk about shed hunting every week. Like, I'm going to start a podcast.
No, definitely wasn't my first thought and jump straight into it, but I had thought about it for a little while before and then decided to go for it. So backing up to why would be, I, like I mentioned before, I've listened to so many different podcasts over the years. So I just naturally kind of like want to listen to things and like have listen to those conversations that are going on and learn something. The biggest thing to me in podcasting is somebody else's story can inspire, or somebody else's lesson can be like, their lesson learned can be your lesson learned. So
yeah,
those are things I like to like key in on when people are talking about things that I'm interested in. So shed hunting being one of them. So lots of hunting podcasts, lots of shed hunting episodes, tons of great information out there. Pretty much any and every shed hunting episode I've pretty much listened to at this point, sometimes multiple times. Like, I've listened to multiples of yours over again, and like the Hush Life podcast, I've listened to their shed hunting kind of round table they did with Chesser and Martin Chagg and stuff like that. And then just a lot of good information. So, and then I was just kind of like, man, why isn't there just one specifically for shed hunting? And there wasn't really. There was one guy who went on there, he started it and then did like a few, maybe one or two episodes, and then it kind of just died out. Maybe I think it was during COVID, so maybe he just got busy again.
Maybe, hopefully he didn't get COVID and die.
Yeah. Maybe he just, you know, moved on from it, like, oh, it's not gonna work, you know. And I just was like, you know what, there's not one, I'm just gonna go for it. And yeah, so
it's cool. I have a buddy that just started, and I think you listened to one of those episodes, Chris Rowan. I think it's Rowan. Christopher Rowan just started Bone Stackers, because he's just, dude, the kid just loves shed hunting. He's 16. Mm-hmm. He had this class where they had to do like a passion project and pick something that they wanted to do. And so he picked podcasting and asked me if I'd help him set it up. But him and his dad and his brother and his uncle especially, those guys find whitetail sheds like you would not believe. I mean, they find, I think every year him and his brother and his dad try to beat his uncle. But it's like they're both going to find 150 each.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like, that family's finding 300 whitetail sheds a year.
Yeah, that's crazy. That, I mean, a season like that would be awesome for sure.
Stacking. I don't know what to do with them all.
I'd just be piled up. I know they get stacked up to where I've got I've recently started like a little pile that I'm like, okay, I wouldn't mind getting rid of. So sometimes I just give them away to friends. Like, people will be like, oh, you know, this and that, or my mom really likes them, the dog sometimes, and then sometimes other friends just like notice them in the house. I have them kind of throughout my house as like decor, you know. So people will ask about them. I'm like, oh, well, here, just take this one, you know? So
I've got a business idea that I think would be really fun to launch. Like, but man, I don't know. So, you know how, like, you know how you'll find, like, now is a perfect example. So there'll be people out there that do side gigs that they don't tell anybody about, right? Mm-hmm. For a very specific reason, especially in our world today. We all know what we're talking mm-hmm. about, right? Mm-hmm. They got a little jalapeno in their Instagram bio.
Mm-hmm. A little spicy link.
Yeah. And so, you know, or sometimes they don't even have that. It's like completely separate. They change their name. They don't want anyone to know. Mm-hmm. It'd be kind of like that. But for me, I'm thinking of like taking, especially the one-year-old sheds, because no one wants to keep one-year-old deer sheds, and chopping them up and selling them specifically to people that have rodents for pets. Because rodents have to always, like the dog chews thing is huge, but dogs, mm-hmm. number one, they don't need to chew on bone. Mm-hmm. They like to, but they don't need to. And most vets will say that's not a good idea. Don't give your mm-hmm. dog a bone. You'll chip a tooth. Right. Mm-hmm. But rodents have to chew on stuff mm-hmm. or else their teeth grow too long and they die. Mm-hmm. And so it's like a renewable resource, like a mm-hmm. renewable revenue. And then I would market it completely like left wing San Fran Valley, like pastel colors. There would not be one picture of me associated with the brand. There would be not one thing of hunting or camo. Like it would be complete metro, whatever.
All natural.
Like if you looked at the website, you'd be like, oh, these guys are out there at PETA rallies on their spare time. And it's like a dude that just loves hunting. Yeah, that's what I think would be a fun business to just like you'd pay people to take the video and the marketing and do like the little ASMR with your little speaker right next to the bunny, just chewing on it. Just, you know.
Yeah,
I think it'd be fun. Yeah, but I just don't have time to start another business.
There's a market for everything out there, so I'm sure it would do well. That's so funny.
Well, I feel like that crowd will be like, "Oh, whatever. It doesn't cost doesn't matter when it comes to Mr. Fluffers." You know,
yeah.
Like, these are organic. They're you know harm free, zero impact, carbon neutral. And then you could sell like the pedicles. You know how like Gardetto's, everyone loved the black chips the best. And so now they sell just a bag of the whatever they're called. Mm-hmm. You could do like the pedicles and you could have like bone chips or like antler chips and just a bag of the pedicles and you charge twice as much for it. But I'm just thinking like, you know, I don't know if have you sold any antlers yet? Have you gotten to this point where you're selling antlers?
No, I haven't. I've talked to a couple different ones, but I just haven't seen them at like the right time. So yeah. That little pile I was building in my garage is just kind of for whenever a buyer's around and it's like opportunistic, you know, then I'll sell that little pile, but
yeah,
not going for it yet. Yeah.
But you've probably done, like, I don't know what the prices are today, but like 2 years ago, it was roughly $20 a pound for a brown elk mm-hmm. shed. Which is mm-hmm. like Stephen Walker gave me a shed. I got home and weighed that puppy. It's like he just handed me a $100 bill. It's like that shed was 5.5-6 pounds. Like that's a lot. Yeah. That's like serious money. Like not like life changing money, but like I don't walk around and just hand my buddies a $100 bill, right? But
yeah,
I find plenty of them. You know, you tab it. But though, you know, how many yearling whitetail sheds it takes to get a pound is insane. Like, I've got some really big whitetail sheds. Sheds that I can't mm-hmm. put my fingers around the bases that would probably mm-hmm. I don't have the right elk shed in here, but they have bases the same size as, like, a raghorn elk shed.
Mm-hmm.
Heavy. I'm like, holy moly, this whitetail shed weighs a lot. 2.25 pounds.
Yeah,
And that's a big one.
Yeah, that's why everybody likes finding elk sheds. I mean, they're so much bigger. They got a lot more weight when you stack them up.
Yeah, but my 354-inch bull, both antlers are chopped off, so you can take the move the mount. They both mm-hmm. weigh 11 pounds, so they're both like, I don't know, $220 in antler value. You know, way more valuable to me as a mount, but
yeah,
$450 worth of antler sitting on his head.
Yeah,
and so I'm thinking like, on its own, a yearling whitetail deer shed is not worth much. It probably takes 20 yearlings to equal a pound, maybe 10. Mm-hmm. So it's like that, maybe $2. But if I chop it up, put it in a bag with a picture of a bunny on it, mm-hmm. I could probably sell it for $14.99. And now I'm getting like $150 a pound.
Yeah, much more, much more bang for the buck.
Yeah. So I don't know, but I just don't have, my wife has a limit on how many businesses I can start and operate at the same time. And I'm over objective.
I'm maxed out right now.
I'm maxed out with two podcasts, a beard oil business, my day job, and everything else.
Dang. So,
yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty wild. Yeah, some of those whitetail sheds, man, are very valuable, though, with the types that they are.
Yeah, once you get to a certain size, then you start selling them based on their size. And matched set, a 12-point. I mean, same with elk and everything else. Like, once you get to that certain size, they get valuable fast.
And they start getting kickers, and when you start getting some funky stuff with them, they get... I have a... Hold on, let me grab this, actually.
Yeah, I think I saw a picture of what you're grabbing.
Yeah, this one.
With the drop?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This one, I got this one for $20.
Wow.
And it was just like at a random thing in Nebraska. So I'd rather find my sheds, but this, we were at like some little Christmas little farm show thing, and it had all kinds of little shops in there, and they were selling stuff in there. So I was like, well, how much is this one? And they were like, $20. And I'm like, $20, sold.
Dude, I have a buddy. I should get him on the podcast, because he's found a ton of sheds in his day. He had 1,000 of them stolen from him.
Wow.
He was moving, and he put all of his antlers in a storage unit, and someone broke into a storage unit and stole all of his antlers. Not all of it. He kept the big ones at home, but he had a buck that he was chasing, and he could hunt the buck. And mm-hmm. he had found, I think it was like a left 1 year, and then a right 1 year, and then a match set, and then the deer died. But one of the sheds was, I think, 104 inches.
Wow.
On its own as a whitetail. So like 225 inch deer.
Yeah.
And so he had all this history with this deer. And then one winter after season, deer died, and it died out in the middle of his neighbor's like cattail pond thing on the ice. So he's like, it's right there. You've heard me talk about how I use my Arctic coolers in a modular system to make sure I have the exact cooler and size I need for whatever application I'm doing. I don't like taking a bunch of truck space and using it on too many coolers, and I definitely don't like to be light on coolers so I can't keep my wild game cold on the way home. But one of the things I haven't really talked about is all the accessories Arctic has to really take a modular system to the next level. All of the coolers that I use, whether it's the Ultralight 72 on wheels or the Ultra Tough 110 or Ultra Tough 145, come with the option to get dividers. Some of the dividers are even freezable, and it makes it super easy to keep all of my things organized in my cooler. I separate my drinks from my food, from some of the snacks, and it makes it easy to grab exactly what I want out of each of them. They also come with a whole host of accessories, from baskets to keep your dry goods out of the ice, to wagons to easily transport those bigger Ultra Tough series coolers, and even cushions to make owning a cooler enjoyable again. No more digging to the bottom of the ice, cutting up your fingers, and making your hands freezing cold just to try to find that last Coors Light or the ketchup bottle. Go check out the coolers in the link in our show notes. Head to the description and scroll down. You're going to see all of our sponsor and discount information, and we've got a link for you that's going to take you over and show you all the sweet accessories Arctic has to offer. And you're going to see why owning an Arctic cooler makes it enjoyable again to be bringing roto-molded coolers with you wherever you go. And so he called his neighbor and said, hey, this deer died. I've been chasing it. I got a lot of history with it. Whatever. Would you mind if I went and got the deadhead or what? You know, they worked out a deal. So the deer is like, I think it was like a 227-inch deer.
Wow.
Yeah, guess how much the guy charged him to go get that
dang.
That
how much did he charge him?
$500.
$500. That's messed up.
I feel like it was a great buy for him.
Yeah. Yeah, that's tough because it's definitely worth more than that for sure.
Yeah.
And especially with the years. And that's the thing with sheds. It's like for him to have all those stolen would suck because the amount of time and effort and kind of what they're that value to you, it's just worth so much more than sometimes the dollar price that they put to them, you know?
Oh, it'd still be a felony.
Yeah.
No, and the dog, all of his good ones are still there. He has all those big ones. I saw him. I mean, he brought him to a event one time, and I'm like, holy smokes. He kept a close eye on him at that
point. Yeah.
But yeah, no, it was just all of his, like, two-year-olds and three-year-olds. Like, he had a pile of them, and they all got
just his other garage piles, basically.
Yeah, his garage pile. But yeah, I was like, I couldn't believe – first of all, I couldn't believe the guy sold it to you. If I found a 220-inch deadhead, I'd never sell that sucker. And then to sell it for $500, where it's like probably $5,000.
Yeah, that's crazy.
If you put it at an antler buyer auction.
Yeah, some of those, that's why I was saying some of those collections and stuff like that are worth some serious money. Like the Idol archives, when I talked to Cody Idol and the amount of history with his dad, Dick Idol, and those.
Is that the one that has legendary, like a wood shed, like a shed built all the wood that's just like 17,000 antlers inside of it?
No, that is actually Jim Phillips. Okay. Yeah. Jim Phillips, he passed away just a couple years ago, but he collected for years and years. And Meat Eater went on, did a podcast with him as well, so you can hear that one. They did a whole podcast with him on everything, and they walked around his shop and stuff. But that place, man, is absolutely incredible, and I am gonna do a podcast out on that soon, so I don't want to give away too many details. But
oh, you're gonna cover it like a story?
No, I'm gonna do a podcast because I checked it out, and so
okay.
I don't know if you've seen Hawkenstock. He's really big on in the whitetail world. I think he actually hunts a lot of over in the Dakotas. So he actually helped me out. So it's Kelby Hawkins. So Kelby actually helped me out with getting into there. And we were able to check that thing out, man. I've got pictures and videos for days of that place. It's just absolutely incredible. The amount of sheds and funky stuff and piles in that place are insane. Like you mentioned, there are literally like 16 plus thousand antlers in that shop, and it was insane.
I wonder how they keep the mice out.
I'm not sure, but man, it was clean. So
yeah, I feel like that's the one downside to like hiding sheds in your shop is like the mice just get in there and start eating them apart.
Yeah, I don't know. I never saw any signs of anything. I'm sure they do some work in there to keep them out of there, but or maybe the way he built it, I'm not sure. But
yeah,
no, he was an incredible guy, man. He did a lot of shed hunting for a lot of years, and he had quite the collection. I mean, down to the smallest little trident looking shed that would fit in the palm of your hand, up to like the biggest elk shed I've ever seen with like a 20 something inch drop tine, you know. So there was some big stuff.
Wow. And that's going to be an upcoming episode of Shedcast.
Yep. Yeah. Kelby is very, very busy guy, but we are going to shoot a podcast coming up here pretty soon. So we kind of are getting that locked in, and then we're going to do it. So, but that one will be cool to see.
For awesome. Sure. Yeah, well, looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Speaking of Shedcast and future episodes, give the listeners before we end here where they can go find social media, follow along, listen to the podcast, go check out 365 days a year, solid shed hunting content.
Yeah. Shedcast on Instagram, it's just Shedcast with the little underscore at the end of it. And then Shedcast Podcast on TikTok, and then Shedcast Podcast, I believe, on YouTube as well. So, yep, just trying to generate that content, man. Hopefully education. I got a lot of stuff in the works. I definitely want to work on, I have a long list of guys that are already recorded. I'm just working on the edits and the timing for it to come out. And then I have a long list of follow-ups and guys that are in the works. And then I've got a longer list of projects that I want to do with it too. So tip videos coming out, kind of just a bunch of different stuff surrounding that. And then just the shed hunting in general. I mean, I just need to get out and go shed hunting and stretch the legs, but a lot of that stuff, I kind of feel like when I'm out shed hunting and stuff, I just think of stuff, jot it down, and then it's on the idea list for what's next, you know? So
yeah,
appreciate it.
Great time to think of new ideas.
Yeah, definitely. So, but I appreciate everybody listening so far and kind of all the words of encouragement they've given me along the way. So, it's good to kind of be in the podcasting world and kind of learning. And that's what's kind of funny actually about the being a part of like the hunting industry in that regard. And then also like the podcasting world, because when I was at the Hunt Expo, I'm talking to everybody that's doing podcasts live there and stuff like that. And then also looking at and talking to a lot of the companies and a lot of the big guys that I like for shed hunting and hunting. And then, so it's just kind of the best of both worlds all wrapped into one. It's kind of cool that way.
Yeah, I bet. I want to get out to the Western Hunt Expo one of these years. I haven't been there yet.
It was a really cool place, man. It was a really cool time. A lot of great stuff going on there for sure.
Awesome.
Definitely. Yeah.
Cool, cool. Well, once again, thank you for being here today, Dale. Excited for some future Shedcast episodes coming out. We'll be, I'm sure all of us Western Rookie podcast listeners will be checking out Shedcast, and it's that time of year. Shed season's here.
Yeah, definitely excited for it. And everybody else, man, good luck with getting out there and picking up some antlers.
Perfect.
I appreciate it, Brian.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for being here. Thank you for listening.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
President's Day savings are happening now at the Home Depot with up to 40% off select appliances. Looking to upgrade your fridge? Check out LG's newest model, serving up ice in all kinds of styles. Cube, crushed, craft ice, and now new mini craft ice straight from the dispenser. From cold brew to fizzy favorites, these refrigerators will have you entertaining like a pro. Shop President's Day savings and get up to 40% off, plus free delivery on select appliances like LG at the Home Depot. Free delivery on appliance purchases of $1,498 or more. Offer valid February 5th through the 25th. U.S. only. See store online for details.
The world moves fast. Your workday, even faster. Pitching products, drafting reports, analyzing data. Microsoft 365 Copilot is your AI assistant for work. Built into Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and other Microsoft 365 apps you use. Helping you quickly write, analyze, create, and summarize. So you can cut through clutter and clear a path to your best work. Learn more at Microsoft.com/M365 Copilot.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.